KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Ted. This is the Freak Power Ticket. And today's show is Orange Mechanique and Rhino Resurrected Film Festival Preview Horror Show. This is anticipating this week's opening of the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. And curiously enough, I do believe I've read that the Thursday night gala event has the theme A Clockwork Orange or Orange Mechanique, which is on some levels a little bit strange, but this is, well, actually 2011 just passed was the 40th anniversary of Stanley Kubrick's brilliantly realized but controversial 1971 movie, A Clockwork Orange. So today's show will feature music from the film and music inspired by the film and bands inspired by the film. So to get us started, we're going to listen to a track from Die Toten Hosen, a German legendary punk rock band who put together, basically wrote music for an adaptation of Anthony Burgess's acclaimed novel, A Clockwork Orange. And this is for the German stage production, a musical stage production of A Clockwork Orange, Die Toten Hosen, with Hier kommt Alex, reference to Alex DeLarge, the character played by occasional area resident Malcolm McDowell. Here on the Freak Power Ticket, the first half hour, A Clockwork Orange. The second half hour of this program is on Rhino Resurrected, the incredibly strange story of the world's most famous record store. Stay tuned for that. Here's Die Toten Hosen. This is a song, if it loads properly, by Wildman Fisher. I was just emailed this track. It's featured in a movie called Rhino Resurrected, the incredibly strange story of the world's most famous record store, a new film from director Keith Shapiro, and he's waiting patiently. Let's just introduce him, and maybe we can play that track along with some others. Any story of Rhino Records is going to be highly musical and kind of something I'm interested in. Let's put Keith on right now. Hey, Keith, can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, Ted.
Oh, very good. Okay, thanks for bearing with me this morning. And you are the director of a new film that's having its premiere, world premiere, at the Santa Barbara International Film Festival this coming Friday, 4:30 p.m. at the Libero Theater, which is one of the oldest theaters on the West Coast, on the West. And so you've directed a new film called Rhino Resurrected, the incredibly strange story of the world's most famous record store. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about the story of Rhino and why you made a film of it and of that story.
And, sure, Ted.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, no problem, man. Great to be here. Basically, I heard about, well, it all started when I was about 13, and I would listen to Dr. Demento on the radio, and I'd hear such wonderful ditties as Fish Heads and, you know, Pencil Neck Geek and all that stuff. And he would sometimes talk about this mythical place called Rhino Records. And it never really occurred to me that it was a real place, or it was a bit disembodied, being in Pittsburgh, PA. And when I moved out to L.A. in 1998, I saw there was a real record store named Rhino Records. And I was pretty much beside myself. So, of course, I started shopping there. Flash forward, you know, what, 15 years later, the original founder, Rhino, I'm getting a little music there, Ted, really good.
You still have it? Okay.
Yeah, it's really loud.
Huh, okay.
Anyway.
Well, keep going. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. Sure. You know, I do love Clockwork Orange. I can hear it in my head.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Wonderful. Yeah, Wendy Carlos is haunting me. Anyway, so I he had a pop-up store. And for about 2 weeks, they recreated Rhino Records. Sam Epstein, who's producer on the film, was the director of the store. And it just turned into this massive celebration of something that was kind of gone away, you know? Mm-hmm. And the second I heard about it, I went in there and really felt something happening. Borrowed my friend's camera and shot 2 weeks straight of performances and people. And the more people I met and the more they talked about Rhino, the more incredibly interesting the story became. And I had no idea the whole history. So I decided to plant my flag in the Rhinoverse and just run out there and start interviewing everybody, and made this whole movie, which has been a great experience. And I can't wait to share it with Santa Barbara and the world.
So when did Rhino start?
It
opened its doors in Westwood in what year?
You know, on the sign it says 1973, I don't believe that's correct, but that's very Rhino. I think it was somewhere between 1972 and 1974 they opened their doors. Everybody has a different answer. But, yeah, it started, you know, by the mid-70s it was rolling. And, you know, it was just a hub of all sorts of oddballs in L.A. at the time. Mm-hmm. And lots of people that went on to amazing careers.
For instance, Nels Klein, who's now playing with Wilco, who's a noted guitarist, he's sessioned with so many people, but has put out his own work. It's kind of more avant-garde, but then also plays with, you know, huge rock bands.
Yeah, he's had an amazing trajectory. But yeah, he worked at Rhino for about 20 years. So, he was also doing his crazy jazz stuff, you know, supporting himself on the side at Rhino. And a guy named Jeff Gold, who was an early employee, went on to become VP of Warner Brothers. I believe had something to do with signing the Police at A&M. And just went on to have an amazing career. Is now like the biggest dealer of memorabilia, of rock and roll, in the world, pretty much. Well, not dealer. He, you know, like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame calls him. You know what I mean? It's called Record Mecca. Gary Stewart went on to be a label exec and iTunes, and that, you know, just the whole story. I don't know if you want to talk about the label, but that record store went on to create one of the most renowned and people's favorite label that got a bunch of old rock and roll music out to the world that might have disappeared. So
1970s, they opened the doors. It's in Westwood. What distinguished it from other record stores in Los Angeles?
Well, it seems like they had the worst attitude of all of them, actually. But people just have legendary, like, their acerbic, I don't know if I say wit, but they definitely, you didn't want to buy the wrong records, but they also really cared about music. You know, they were so passionate. They steered people in the right direction and opened up people's eyes to, you know, things they probably never would have heard. So, I mean, just think, you know, everybody talks about Sunset Tower and, you know, like all the famous rock people that worked there. But Rhino was like more of an all-encompassing universe. Like someone in my movie says, you know, nobody had an ethos quite like them. And you probably, when you think of Rhino Records in your head, it probably conjures up some sort of image of, I don't know, sort of maybe Ed Wood movies or wrestling or sleazy LA, right? You know, I don't know. Like, how many things have an ethos like that? You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. So they were really into novelty records, and kind of the remaindered bin, so to speak, was kind of a rich treasure trove in their store. And they also resisted the kind of corporatization of popular music.
Absolutely. They would take like the popular albums of the day and tack them up on the wall with a big sign that says, you know, you can call Warner Brothers, why this costs $9.98 instead of $7.90. You know, they were a bit iconoclastic like that. Mm-hmm. In a very sort of funny way. But you know, they were serious about their ideals, you know. Mm-hmm.
So the independent record store, at least, and that's part of the story, their relationship with was Atlantic Records?
Yeah, that was way later. I mean, I'll tell you that if you've ever heard of a guy named Wildman Fisher, mm-hmm. Who they actually made a whole separate documentary about, he was a schizophrenic street singer. And Frank Zappa happened to put him on his label, made a double album with him called An Evening with Wildman Fisher. It's a bit of a collector's item. He made that in the late 60s and had a falling out with him. And Wildman would just hang around L.A. and sing his crazy songs. And one day in 1975, he came into Rhino. And the guy said, hey, Wildman wrote a song about Rhino. You want to hear it? They said, hey, grab your tape recorder. They recorded this crazy song, which is called Go to Rhino Records. It kind of goes, it's hard to call it a song. It just kind of goes, go to Rhino Records on Westwood Boulevard. You know, it's just like offbeat.
Do you mind if we try it?
You can try it.
I think this might play here.
Give it a whirl.
Thanks for sending the MP3 over. And
go to Rhino Records on Westwood Boulevard. Go to Rhino Records on Westwood Boulevard. Go to Rhino Records on Westwood Boulevard. On Westwood Boulevard.
I mean, come on, you can't beat that.
Wow. So he just passed away, right? Yeah.
That's why I was so attracted to the story, because, I mean, you know, I don't think the consultants would agree that was, you know, a number one hit.
Exactly. So, and they put out, so he put out full length.
Yeah, he actually, their first full length LP was a Wild Man Fisher LP.
Wow. So he's kind of like Wesley Zappa Willis thing. Or something, right? So the Zappa helped bring him to attention. It's, yeah.
But then outsider Rhino music, brought him back 10 years later, you know, 8 years later, because they love that kind of stuff.
Right.
And basically, they put out that single, that Go to Rhino Records, as a kind of a joke. Also made the famous Rhino symbol, an artist named William Stout, who's in my film. And he'll show you how to draw it in the movie. They made that symbol. They put a 45 together, you know, which was a bigger deal back then. And didn't think much of it. Gave it away to their customers as a Christmas gift, basically. And somehow made it over to John Peel and ended up on his Festival 50. And before you know it, a lot of people wanted it. And like Harold Bronson, co-founder of label, said, that's what started it all. And they just started, you know, taking chances and, you know, reissuing things. And I don't know. You might want to talk further about that.
So Wild Man Fisher, he just passed away. Did I read that?
He passed away in 2011. Yeah. His life is pretty rough. There's a movie called Derailroaded that, chronicles his life. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, he was a real live, crazy man, you know, who was talented, but, you know, had some serious problems. Pretty sad.
What year did Rhino close? Like about 4 or 5?
It's a little complicated, but the store itself had moved to become a bigger store, and it was a really cool big store. But it also opened on September 11th, 2001.
Wow.
Also coincided with the opening of Amoeba. It just kind of everything just went wrong, and so that store closed down in 2005. You know, the label still exists, but the label is an independent entity. It got bought by Warner Brothers. So the label's more of a boutique imprint of Warner Brothers now. But all the my movie covers the period where it was all the original people, and, you know, independent.
Right. Right. And so you have this independent record store. They start their own label and grow, but and really have an impact with the local. So here's this hub for media production, and so people just gravitated towards their Westwood store. To find and this is pre digital, so like crate digging was a lot more kind of essential to music collectors. It's a real masculine world, and that's something you kind of touch on in the film. But maybe you can talk a little bit about record collecting as a kind of male compulsion.
Yeah, it seems like 20-to-1 ratio, man. There's always those cool girls that collect records, right? So, I mean, yeah, it's a little bit of a nerdy masculine world, but and I include myself in that world, of course. But you know, there is a female presence. There was always like a few girls that worked at Rhino. I would have liked to have got a few more of them in the film, but I got a couple of them.
How long did you work on the movie?
I worked on it. I put it away for a little while, but for about a year and a half, I would say. Or still working on it, technically, in some ways. I added some stuff to it along the way. Got a new interview with Dr. Demento, things like that. So, but yeah, it's coming up on 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, so this is the world premiere coming up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Libero. And do you have some kind of tie-in events where people can
One thing, it screens with an awesome short film called Music Man Murray, directed by Richard Parks. Who is the son of Van Dyke Parks, who is, of course, awesome, who I believe is playing there on Tuesday at the Soho.
Yeah, and I actually have a pair of tickets to give away for that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Before the end of the hour here.
And it's a really cool movie about another record store in L.A., about an old man who has a giant record collection and can't decide whether to keep his store or not. It's a really good little movie. So we screened together. That's about 20 minutes. You know, I totally forget what you asked me, Ted. What you just asked about the world premiere?
Oh yeah, I was reading something. Rhino Resurrected Fan Club at the Whale Tail.
Oh yeah,
people
come
meet you.
Our friends took over the Whale Tail Deli, and they're in the process of turning it into a new restaurant. But please come by. Mention Rhino Resurrected. They're having all sorts of happy hour deals.
Okay,
you'll probably see me out front drinking, and
and that's going to be the
greeting everybody
before or after the screening.
On Friday it'll be after. Saturday is a really late night screening, so that'll be before, and then Tuesday will probably be who knows. And then it's just an ongoing thing because I'll be there all weekend. I'll be happy to talk records with you if you want to come up to me.
There are three screenings. The world premiere is Friday, January 27th, but also it's screening on Saturday the 28th and Tuesday the 31st.
That's right.
At the Metro 4.
Metro 4, yeah. Saturday's at 10 o'clock at night, and then Tuesday's at 4:20, which, you know, I won't make
someone
the,
had fun with that.
It was a joke, yeah. But, yeah, please come by. Come out to the Little Barrel on Friday at 4:30, because it's going to be awesome.
So people can find out more at sbiff.org.
Yes. And
so we need to wind things down here.
Damn.
And, but maybe, is there anything we didn't cover that you'd like to kind of reflect on?
Oh man, there's so much to cover. Anything? I mean,
you know, I think partly from coming from a community radio environment, the store is like kind of this public space that that was this hub for people. You know, like not just virtual relationships, but in person ones, and it's like that these spaces absolutely are disappearing. I mean, I guess although someone I watched the movie with commented on, well, there's Amoeba. So why didn't Rhino like kind of have the Amoeba like model figured out?
Well, that's a great question. I have absolutely nothing against Amoeba, and I like Amoeba, and I've shopped there many times. But you know, Amoeba feels to me like maybe the last of something. Whereas when we were in the heat of all these communities, it wasn't like that. You know, so this sort of physical community of everybody mingling and fighting and you know, arguing and but also, you know, passionately collaborating is. I wouldn't say it's dying, but we're trying to find new ways to make it happen. And I know we have the internet, and the internet's awesome. But, you know, to actually physically be together and sometimes even be a little uncomfortable or be judged by someone is, you know, is something that I think we need to figure out how to do again. But, you know, like you have places like Warbler mm-hmm. in Santa Barbara, which is an awesome record store. But I think that's a new model. You'd have these really small places that are just really curated or, you know, really big. So the big corporate places are dead as a doornail, but that's a good thing. Right.
Right. And then the label is just kind of a shell of what it was in terms
I don't want to say that, but,
well, in terms of, or it's just the brand now.
Exactly right. Yeah. It's a brand now. And, yeah. I think they still do good work, but, yeah, it's not, I mean, it's just a totally different, thing.
Yeah.
As well, far as I'm concerned.
And you have a connection to Allison Anders. I noticed. Thank you to her and her daughter is
Tiffany.
Tiffany, yes,
yeah,
a musician in her own right.
She was a great supporter of the film. We actually showed an early version of it at the Don't Knock the Rock Festival, which is just kind of a sneak preview. Yeah.
And Allison has ties to this campus, so that's
I think she's going to be up there. She's great and you know, really supportive and cool. A great filmmaker. So yeah, you know, it's all right, man. The movie's real rock and roll, and I think you'll learn something, but you're going to have a lot of fun.
The L.A. punk scene. This is one last thing, and but you represent kind of like the kind of Nuggets world, of 1960s garage rock and bands like Love and 13th Floor Elevators and. The Midnighters, kind of a little earlier than them maybe, but along with the novelty stuff, and then the punk scene was like really gravitated towards the space. So it's an interesting story. It's a really kind of rich story of kind of LA, the LA underground.
I didn't know that they were so involved in punk. That was something I learned.
Yeah,
totally. You know.
So. Well, I need to go, but thank you, Keith Shapiro, director of Rhino Resurrected, for your time this morning. And
thank you, Ted.
Yeah. And we'll look for you at the Libero and other screenings too, but the Libero Theater is the world premiere this coming Friday, January 27th, part of the SBIFF. You can find out more at sbiff.org. Do you have a website?
You know, it's too complicated to say on the air.
You'll start.
But,
okay.
You can link to it through the SBIFF.
Oh, okay. SBIFF. Very good.
All
okay.
Right.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you. Can't wait.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. And we're just kind of heading out. We're going to listen to a song from the 13th Floor Elevators. Coming up next is UCSB Reads, and the book this year is Moby Duck, so we'll be starting things off with Vice Chancellor Gene Lucas, and so stay tuned for that. Here's a song from the 13th Floor Elevators, and if I can get this working properly. Speaking of Van Dyke Parks, if you'd like a pair of tickets to see Van Dyke Parks perform at Soho, Club Mercy is bringing them here on Tuesday, January 31st. Give us a call, 805-893-2424. A pair of tickets to see Van Dyke Parks. UCSB Reads is coming up.